The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon.
Yeah, we've already spilled coffee on Bill's computer, and
It's not smoking or anything, so it must be okay.
Yeah, we've had all our pratfalls already. We got them all out of the way right there in that first couple minutes.
It's addicted to caffeine, like I am.
Oh my gosh,
it's my computer.
Bob, how's it going?
You were supposed to wait till we went on air to do that.
Yeah, sounds of a struggle. Oh my gosh. Anyway, we have a really fun show today. We have Mr. Patrick Wood on with us today. We're going to talk about technocracy again. And, you know, I say again because it's kind of, it was a groundwork for all sorts of things. And I got his email update. Hey, you know, Patrick, you're going to have to send me a link on how people get your email updates. What's the method that they use?
They can just sign up on the list at technocracy.news. That would be an easy way to do it.
Okay. I'll add a link on there for that because the emails are great, and they cover all sorts of different things. And as I was looking down the list, I thought, time for another show. Got to get them on. It's like, okay, it's getting away from us now. The technocracy has mushroomed. So all the things that you need from us, you can find online at wethepeopleradio.us. I know it's confusing. The .com was taken but not used, irritatingly enough. So wethepeopleradio.us will get you to all of our archives, always the current show. It has a nice link there on the top if you want to join the chat room during a program. And then by 2:30 or so, we have a copy of the program in archive form posted on the website. And then later in the afternoon, Robert makes us a commercial-free copy, usually splits it hour, you know, 1 hour and the second hour. So if you miss any or all of it, you can forward that to somebody. Appreciate it if you post on... I guess you could post on Facebook, but I don't like Facebook as much as Twitter. People really follow Twitter. And since we started using it, I don't know, views on the website are up over 30,000-something since December. So
yeah, a lot of folks on Twitter.
Very good. All right. That's all the business end, right?
Yeah.
We're good?
Yeah, I think you did good.
All right. Try to have some organized beginning.
Yeah. Keep your coffee to yourself, and I think we'll get along just fine.
We've only been doing this for, like, what, 5 years? And now we have an organized beginning. It's probably ruin all the fun, but what the heck. So, Mr. Wood, what would you like to tell people about yourself? Because I don't really have a bio posted for you. What I have posted is why you wrote the book Technocracy Rising. But maybe you could give folks a little bit of background on yourself.
Yeah, that was good. Well, you know, I've been writing about globalization for almost 40 years now.
Jeez.
Wow. That's hard to believe. I don't know what to do with that. It's not exactly depressing.
You must be old. Oh, wait, so are we.
I know, it is.
That's why we care.
Gosh. You know, and half the things I talk about, I was an eyewitness to. That's scary too.
That is, but you know, in a good way, this isn't something that you learned on the internet, since obviously there was no internet.
There was no internet.
Did we have microwaves then? I don't think we did. I know I didn't. That was a long time ago. So we were all still. My nephew asked me one time when I told him we didn't have microwaves when my kids were little. He said, did you have to cook your food on a fire?
There you go.
I was like, no, honey, we actually had stoves and stuff. We just didn't have microwaves. No fire. So back when you were cooking with fire, what were you doing that brought you into all this?
Yeah, I was very fortunate to have established a relationship with a man by the name of Anthony C. Sutton after he had left the Hoover Institution for War, Peace, and Revolution at Stanford University. And prior to that, he'd been a professor of economics at UCLA for several years in Southern California. And then he went to work for the Hoover Institution as a research fellow, did tremendous work there. He was very highly respected for his early works, especially. And he got forced out of Stanford University. And I happened to run into this this guy down in New Orleans at a gold conference of all places. He was had been invited to speak there. And as I remember, I think I was going to do a workshop or something. And somehow we just got seated at the same table for breakfast at the cafe in the hotel. And it was European seating at that point. The hotel was so busy that you sit where we put you if you want to eat. Well, okay. I didn't like that. I hate to sit down with strangers. You know, like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to say? And anyway, we struck up a conversation. And after about 30 minutes, we knew we had a huge story in this organization called the Trilateral Commission. And Tony had been studying it. He realized that that's what got him forced out of Stanford, because David Packard, the president of Stanford, was one of the founding members of the Trilateral Commission.
Oh, surprise.
And yeah, surprise. And so they didn't want Tony to be on the hunt, so to speak. Tony had a reputation at Hoover. They called him affectionately the Hoover vacuum cleaner. He was that kind of researcher. And once he got his bloodhound nose on a trail or something, he didn't give up. He never gave up. And he went to the ends of the earth to dig up stories, literally. So these people, plus he was very knowledgeable, and these people at the Trilateral Commission did not want to get him, and especially tied into a prestigious organization like Hoover, to start writing in a negative way about the Trilateral Commission. So they go, doink, drop kick, boom.
Yeah. Wasn't Al Gore part of that commission, or was that later?
Oh, Al Gore came along later.
He was busy inventing the internet then.
That's true. He was really tied up.
He was busy architecting the internet.
Thanks for that.
But Gore and Clinton both came in the late 80s, so they were kind of latecomers to that crowd. But we started writing about the Trilateral Commission immediately. I had the means to do so because I was running a printing operation in Scottsdale, Arizona, and printing newsletters for other people. So that, you know, I had the means to immediately kick into gear to do something tangible. And so we started a newsletter called the Trilateral Observer, and we printed it we did a monthly publication for about, probably about 18 months. We co-authored it. Tony contributed some, I contributed some. I did the publishing, and we used direct mail to build a subscription. And after about 18 months, we realized time for a book. And so we took the monthly newsletters we had, put them together, and edited the whole thing to tie it together. And we produced the first volume of Trilaterals Over Washington. And about a year later, we produced the second volume of Trilaterals Over Washington. And it did become the definitive analysis on the Trilateral Commission in the early days, and it stands today as still being really the work to go to if you want to know anything about the Trilateral Commission.
And how was that received in the Washington on the Hill? Was that were you guys kind of pariahs after that?
But back then, it kicked up quite a storm. We sold about 75,000 copies within a couple of years. It was pretty amazing.
Wow,
and that. That was enough to have put us on the New York Times bestseller list. They required, I think, 25,000 in the first 6 months or year or something. But, of course, they didn't put our book. They didn't put our book up.
Yeah, they just missed it.
Yeah, really. Lots of crickets there.
I know. And we debated several members of the Trilateral Commission on the radio. Kind of a point-counterpoint sort of thing. We did a lot of radio work back then because talk radio was just kind of starting, but it was very fruitful for us to get the message out. And a lot of the radio hosts liked the idea of doing point-counterpoint debates. So we'd find out where the members of the Trilateral Commission lived, like what city they lived in from the United States. And we'd call up radio stations in their town and say, hey, you got so-and-so living down the street there. Why don't you contact them and get them on the air and let's do a little debate. And a lot of them fell for it. They thought, oh, that's what a great idea, you know. And so they'd get some member of the Trilateral Commission on, and we'd go at it. And they universally lost. I mean, we just slaughtered them.
Because
as soon as they opened their mouth, people just went nuts. I mean, what? You're doing what?
What were the tenets? What would be the things that they would say that would initially alarm people? Because it didn't take much.
Well, it didn't. And they were talking about creating this new international economic order. And even though we know a lot more about that today, like what's happened with some of the treaties like NAFTA, for instance, that stripped out American industry like crazy from our country and sent it overseas. but in the early days, remember Jimmy Carter was the one that was in office at that time.
Oh, yes.
And Jimmy Carter was universally unliked.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we would challenge him on things, and I don't know if if this was even an issue with you back then, but Jimmy Carter was the president that gave away the Panama Canal.
Oh, yeah.
That was sovereign U.S. property, just as much as Alaska. We owned that, lock, stock, and barrel. It was it was sovereign U.S. territory. And Jimmy Carter gave it away to Panama because Panama was going bankrupt and couldn't pay its debts to U.S. banks. And so a scheme was hatched to send a commission down there to study the whole thing. I mean, we used to bring this up, stuff like this, when we were on the radio. We'd bring this stuff up. And Caspar Weinberger headed a commission that was appointed to facilitate the transfer of Panama Canal over, and Congress was never involved in this, not once, which is patently unconstitutional. It was outrageous as some of the stuff that Obama's doing today. It was just patently treasonous. So this Weinberger Commission was set up to negotiate away the sovereignty of it, send it back to Panama. And the banks got bailed out in the process, out of the big banks like Chemical Bank that were owed buku bucks. They got bailed out of it. The commission had 8 people on it, and 7 of them were members of the Trilateral Commission. 7.
Wow.
And it's like, huh? What?
Yeah.
This smells.
It seems like they've got a hold of everything.
Oh, my gosh, they did. So Carter did a lot of stuff like that that was easy to pick on. We just, you know, you just kind of throw the bone out and say, well, sir, how do you respond to this? How is it that 7 out of 8 people in this commission could be appointed by a supposedly unconnected president, you know, and all of the only people in the world that get appointed to anything important are members of the Trilateral Commission? And they'd have a hard time answering that. For the most part, they would answer something like this. They would say, well, we really look for good people to belong to the Trilateral Commission. It is an exceptional, extraordinary group of men and women.
Of course it is.
And that's why they always get picked. Just happen to be, you know, they're the champions or whatever, they get picked.
Hey, Pat, hold that thought. We better take a quick break or we'll have them all at the end. Bob's giving me the high sign. We will be right back. You are listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online at wethepeopleradio.us for all the information about our guest, his book, and bunches of other good stuff. Be right back.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may
Yikes. It's in the pill you took today. God, that's not that far from the truth. You'll have to play us the rest of it and find out what happens in the future. Who was that anyway?
You don't want to know what happens in the future. You do want to know it was Zager and Evans.
Oh, wow. I knew the song. I didn't know that, though.
One Hit Wonders.
There you go. That's why I didn't know who it was. Okay, so now we know what's going to happen in the future, and we ruined the whole show. Let's go back. We have Patrick Wood on with us. He is the author of Technocracy Rising. Sure, easy for me to say. And it's a great read. Seriously, a great read. Hey, give folks a little definition of technocracy, just because we keep throwing the word around, and just because we've done shows about it doesn't mean they actually know what we're talking about.
No, yeah, that's helpful.
I kind of forgot about that.
There's two ways to look at technocracy. One is, if just look it up in the dictionary, you'll see that the dictionary just says basically is government by experts, you know, like people who know what they're doing.
Bob just fell off his chair.
You know, I'm glad we have people running the sewer department that know what they're doing, what valves to turn, and, you know, what to do in case there's a leak. We appreciate experts, but technocracy with a capital T is something altogether different. That was a movement back in the 1930s that was literally, they prescribed a replacement economic system based on energy distribution and consumption and run by engineers, scientists, and technicians. And the best definition that I can give you to kind of like the real deal is from the Technocrat magazine that was published in 1938. This is a direct quote. I got to copy this magazine when I went to do some research and archives up in Canada, and I caught this, so that's cool. I'm going to hang on to that. Here's what they said, okay? Technocracy is the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population, close quote. Now, that's what they said it is. So it's the science of social engineering, for one, and it's the scientific operation of all of society, the purpose of which is to produce and distribute goods and services to everyone. And at first glance, you think, I don't know, that doesn't shock me, doesn't ring my bell, doesn't knock me over. But here's the essence of technocracy. These people, these scientists and engineers back in the 30s, and it hasn't changed now, by the way, same type of people are saying the same thing today. They want to take over the means of production and consumption. They want to take it over entirely.
So we'll get what they decide.
We'll get the products that we'll get are the ones they decide to make. The products that we're allowed to consume will be the ones they allow us to consume, and in which quantities. And so choice is out the door. Supply and demand principles are out the door. Free enterprise principles are out the door. All that kind of stuff is out the door. In fact, it's such a sea change facing us right now. I just have to throw out this quote from the United Nations. In particular, the lady's name is Christiana Figueres. She's the czar of climate change at the United Nations. Her title is Executive Secretary of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. How'd you like to have that business card?
Yeah.
Wow.
Here's my card. You pull out three cards strung together. You've got to fit the whole title on there.
Yeah.
Executive Secretary of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. She was in a press conference earlier this year, and this is exactly, precisely what she did. I listened to it, transcribed it. This is it. Quote, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we're setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution." That's what she said. It's incredible.
Jeez
Louise. If anybody needs to read between the lines here, she's talking about capitalism and free enterprise, folks. And she went on to say, this is probably the most difficult task we've ever given ourselves, which is to intentionally transform the economic development model for the first time in human history. Close quote. And, you know, people have told me, well, you know, okay, so they're adding a green flavor, you know, they're going to do solar panels or something. You know, it's like, whatever.
Right.
You know, just transform doesn't mean transform. It just means we're doing things just a different. We're going to, we're going to kind of keep an eye on environment as we do business from now on. But when the United Nations uses the word transform or transformation, look it up in the dictionary. This is our language, right? We speak English, right? That's it. Only English. We have a dictionary that tells us the meanings of word. And if you or anybody else doesn't know the meaning of a word, that's not my problem. And it doesn't mean it doesn't have meaning.
I think it wouldn't have scared people so much, but since we got Obama, I think the word transformation's taken on a whole new fear level.
I know, but here's what the dictionary says: a thorough or dramatic change in form or appearance. Now, synonyms used in the same thing: mutation, conversion, metamorphosis, transfiguration, sea change, reconstruction, morphing. Okay, that's transformation. This is not just some little wimp makeover. They're talking about replacing the whole stinking economic system of the world with sustainable development. They also call that at the UN their green economy. This is so huge, I just can't express it. It takes my breath away when I think about it. It gets back to the redistribution
of wealth. I mean, that's now is the UN, are they the forerunners and the ones that are really pushing the technocracy, or is it organizations that are springing out of the UN? I mean, who's at the forefront?
Not at all. The people who started this thing from scratch were members of the Trilateral Commission. That's the only reason, honestly. This was my takeaway from the 25 years I did previously studying the Trilateral Commission. I never understood what they meant by new international economic order until I discovered technocracy, the historical movement of technocracy.
So is
and
the
what I discovered
is the tri-
my, there
is
was a kind of
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you.
Is the Trilateral Commission, are they feeding this information to the UN then?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's so overwhelmingly obvious that when you see it, when you see the evidence of how they were involved in it, you go, uh-oh, I get it. I mean, just instantly.
Right, and it's not a tangential relationship. I mean, these guys have burrowed in and started from the very they're the framework.
They have provided 100% of the framework to get where we are today, and they're hiding behind the dresses of people like Christiana Figueres. They push her out front to do the dirty talk, and they're hiding behind her, just smiling quietly, drinking their scotch, smoking their stogies. I don't know what they're doing, honestly. They probably don't do that.
You never know.
You never know. They're hiding behind the curtain, pulling the strings on this. And they've been doing this now for 40 years, and these turkeys need to be exposed. That's my whole mission right now in this whole business with technocracy. Let's call a spade a spade. I'm reminded, there's a good example of calling a spade a spade. The incident up in Roseburg,
mm-hmm.
where a bunch of people were killed by a young guy, everybody in the press calls him the shooter. The shooter. I think there was a movie called The Shooter one time, or maybe The Shootist or something. They call the shooter. And he killed, I don't know how many people, I don't remember how many people, he killed a bunch of people. And it's a very conservative area up there, by the way. So when Obama decided to go there, they had a huge protest. Get out of here, you bum. We don't want you here. Go home. I don't think Obama probably even heard him, but that's another issue.
Right.
But here's a guy. He's called a shooter. Now, I'll tell you what. This guy is not a shooter. He is a murderer.
Yeah, true story.
They're dodging the truth of the matter when they call him a shooter, because if he's a shooter, then guns are the blame for it.
Yep.
But the guy's a murderer. In the Ten Commandments, it doesn't say, thou shalt not be a shooter. Excuse me.
Yeah, the top ten didn't actually mention that word. You're right.
I know. It's like, you shall not be a murderer. And this guy's a murderer. Well, listen, here's my point. All of this nonsensical talk about sustainable development, climate change and all, the whole mantra that goes through, all this Agenda 21 stuff. take it all in the big bundle, all of it. Take whether smart grid or geoengineering or Common Core education standards or property rights issues, everything you can think of that's wrapped up in Agenda 21. You take that whole big stinking mess, and you can wrap it up, and you can trace it back to these members, early members and later members of the Trilateral Commission. They have been the one that have implemented this stuff. They stand buck naked before the truth, and the truth isn't very hard to discover. I found out the truth is right there in plain sight. It's not even hiding. It's just in plain sight, but nobody wants to look at it. So they call it everything else under the sun except what it is. And what I call it is the biggest scam in the history of the world. It's a scam they're pulling on us. And it's just as transparent as I've ever seen anything in my life. Of course, I've been studying and looking at this stuff for 40 years. Other people might not come to my clarity of vision for a while until they really look at it. But this is the biggest scam in the history of the world that these people are pulling off. And they've changed the whole nature of the game using technocracy as intellectual fodder, I guess. Yep. And it's interesting that the early technocracy movement had no institutional support from the Rockefellers or the Carnegie Mellons or any of those people. The Ford Foundation, they didn't give them a second look. But when Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote his book Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era in 1970, everything changed. Rockefeller all of a sudden saw the light, got together with Brzezinski and says, hey, we're going to roll with this baby. And they said, starting on day one when the Trilateral Commission was founded, that they're going to create a new international economic order. And as it turns out now, there's only one model in history for an alternative economic system. Only one in history has ever been designed, and that was technocracy from the 1930s. Period. End of subject. That's it.
And I want to go through what made them blow up back then and why did we not hear about them. Let's take a really quick break, and when we come back, we'll do that, because it's kind of interesting how these guys are hiding right in plain sight, and that's kind of what did the other guys in, except other people knew what they were looking for. Anyway, we'll be right back with Patrick Wood. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I took a walk around the world to ease my troubled mind. I left my body lying somewhere in the sands of time. But I watched the world flow to the dark side of the moon. I feel there's nothing I can do.
Highly unlikely that'll happen, but I like the hell no part. You're listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Patrick Wood this morning talking about the, I don't know what it is. It's the enslavement, honestly, of the world population, because that's really what happens at the end. They wind up being the boss of us in every facet of our lives. Ain't that so, Mr. Wood?
It is. This is kind of pushing it
back. I'm like,
back,
hey, do you concur?
Like a neo-feudalism that we had during the Dark Ages.
Yeah, we can only, according to their, if you look through the plan, you know, because there will be tons of people who will say, oh, if it's the UN, you know, they're not dangerous. They move like a snail, which they do. But why is this so? Why are they going to? Why are they able to do this so quickly? I guess
they're gathering momentum as time goes on. The way a project works, let's say you're going to build a skyscraper or a big apartment house. You see those go up around occasionally. Let's say you're a developer and you're going to build a big apartment complex, and you figure that if you start today, It's going to be actually built and ready to accept renters, let's say 2018. That's 3 years from now. And so you got to do a lot of stuff. You got to raise financing. You got to get a concept. You got to go out and find some land. You got to build, you got to hire an architect once you get there and go do a whole bunch of stuff, getting permits and stuff along the way. You got to get engineers in to look at your design. And there's tons of stuff you got to do. And you do all those things before you even take a shovel out to dig the first, scoop of dirt. And so if you had 3 years to launch a project like that, nobody in the world, in other words, drivers by, nobody in the world is going to know what's going up on that piece of property until they see the foundation go in. Then they go, oh, look at that. Somebody's doing something over there. And then they come back a week later, and the whole frame is up. You go, holy mackerel, how'd that happen? I was just by here. I didn't see, man, they're working fast.
True.
And then the next thing you see, they got a sign out front, open, you could be living, if you lived here, you'd be home or whatever, And they're filling the thing up. And you go, man, I've never seen anything go up so fast in my life. Well, that's not true at all. There was tons of groundwork and stuff that had to go into it before you ever saw the first part of the superstructure. That's the nature of a project. I don't care what it is. That's the way project management is. 90% of the effort goes into planning. Mm-hmm. 10% goes into execution. And this is what we see here. People just need to understand this is the way life works in big projects. Doesn't matter if you're building a nuclear submarine or a skyscraper or a new international world order. This is the way it works. These people have been planning and jockeying for decades to get where they are today. The fact that we see the fruit all of a sudden is kind of immaterial to the big picture of it. Well, of course we're seeing the fruit. They're starting to build the superstructure now.
Well, the technology in the time frame, as time goes on, the technology, I don't know what the stats are. I forget. You read them every now and then. At how quickly the technology is doubling. And so, yes. And so the capacity to do these things is absolutely being aided by just the expanse of technology and the availability of it.
It is. And they factored that into their plan, by the way.
I'm sure they did.
As things move forward, they know that technology is, advancing incredibly. They make use of it every way they can. But this last meeting, for instance, that took place at the United Nations on September 25, that's the one that the Pope came and spoke at.
Mm-hmm.
That meeting drew all the nations of the world in. This was their plenary session where everybody comes in, all the prime ministers and the leaders. Obama was there. And the United Nations put before them this 2030 agenda document. And they said, this is a wonderful document. We know that we're going to eradicate poverty now. We're going to really do it this time. And all you got to do is, for all these great benefits, you need to sign on and commit to this document, even though it was extremely vague in what it said. You need to just sign on to this document, commit to making these radical changes in your country, in your economy. And we'll get to the details of it later. But these 180 fools that came to the United Nations and listened to the Pope, sing the praises of climate change and sustainable development, they all lined up to sign the stupid document. Globally, they drank the Kool-Aid, took the red pill or whatever color pill it is, all at the same time.
It's probably red.
Oh, man, we're for that. We want to eradicate poverty. Why? We want to have education opportunities for all. And, we want to do all these good things. We want to get rid of disease and blah, blah, blah. And so they signed up for it. Now, okay, how long did it take the United Nations to get all the nations of the world together and primed massaged to sign this document? It didn't just happen at the last spur of the moment. There was a lot of groundwork went in before it. Same thing was true with the original Agenda 21 document back in 1992. That didn't just fall out of the sky. They didn't negotiate this at just that Rio meeting. In fact, it was all a done deal by the time they got to Rio. Nobody really understood it at the time. But the entire Agenda 21 book had already been written. It was already ready to go to press. The United Nations just took them and manipulated them, kind of like a Delphi meeting, right? They just took them and manipulated them and said, man, this is great. You've all had input. You've all put your stamp of approval on it. Now sign it, you turkeys. And they did. They just blindly signed it. And Agenda 21 is born. But a little bit later, the United Nations came out and said, well, where this really came from was from the Brundtland Commission that terminated in 1987. It had run for 5 years, 82 to 87. And the Brundtland Commission, led by a lady by the name of Gro Harlem Brundtland, she was Prime Minister of Norway previously, she was the chairwoman of this commission that created a book called Our Common Future. Now, I know you've seen this book, probably seen a copy of it at least, if you don't have it. Our Common Future, the United Nations says, was the singular book that paved the way for Agenda 21. And every single thought and, you know, idea that ever worked its way into the book of Agenda 21 is found in the book Our Common Future. And that book still colors virtually everything of sustainable development today. In fact, Our Common Future really coined the phrase in the popular context, sustainable development. They're the ones that came up with the phrase. Now, Gro Harlem Brundtland just happens to be a member of the Trilateral Commission.
Oh,
there we go.
Isn't that just a fun little coincidence?
Big surprise.
You see? Well, it is a surprise. It's like, you mean all the sustainable development stuff, all this smart growth, smart grid, smart this, smart that, all this stuff, green economy, is all a put up by the Trilateral Commission? That's exactly what I'm saying. It is.
How do these people become a member of the Trilateral Commission?
You get tapped like a fraternity or a sorority.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if you remember how that works in college or if you were in a situation like that in college, but when you go in as a freshman, typically, they have a week where they have parties. It's called Rush Week.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to go around to the parties, these different, you know, different frat houses and stuff, and sorority houses if you're a woman. Guys don't go to the
Actually, I don't think it matters anymore. Everybody's using the gender bender bathroom.
Depends what pants you have.
We're going to have gender bender sororities now.
Yeah.
And frats.
Back then, that was the case. But you go to a party and you kind of chat up with people and you hope upon hope. If you end up at a party where, oh man, I'd love to join that for, that's the frat I want. I want to be that. I want to be with those people. You hope upon hope that they're going to like you enough to where they come tap you on the shoulder and say, come with me. But you don't apply. Otherwise, just the fact that you're there at the party, you don't apply. So I want to, you know, where's my application? I fill it out. No. They watch you. They evaluate you based on your social skills and how you look and, you know, how you behave and stuff like that. They will come and give you a tap on the shoulder and say, we want to talk to you about joining our fraternity.
And what you have to offer.
That's right. But they pretty much already know, having observed you, what you have to offer, and that's why they're picking you. Well, that's the way the Trilateral Commission works. They have an executive search committee, that determines the people they want to tap for membership. There's no application process there. By contrast, by the way, there is an application process at the Council on Foreign Relations. They have an application. You can't even think about joining unless you fill out the whole application. They could deny your application, of course, and I'm sure they do in many cases. But there is an application process. You initiate that, and you're the only one. People initiate that process are the only ones that will be considered for membership. They don't spot somebody on the street or in business or whatever and say, hey, that guy's not a member of the CFR. You know, let's go down and hustle him. Well, maybe they do that. They might hustle some people, but you get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
You have to self-initiate.
How many of these people are in both? How much crossover is there?
Well, there's a huge crossover in the sense that the CFR has about 3,500 members in North America, whereas the Trilateral Commission only has probably about 150 North American members. So, number-wise, the Trilateral Commission is much, much smaller. You notice the control that the commission has over the CFR when you analyze their board of directors. The board of directors is elected from the ranks, supposedly, of the CFR. I think they have 40. I think it's 40. I want to say 35 or 40 directors. I don't remember right off.
And how many people are in the Trilateral Commission?
Well, there's only worldwide. There's only about 350.
Oh, okay.
So kind of easy to make these sweeping decisions with just that many people.
Yeah.
Hold on, we have to take one more quick break. I'm sorry about that, because we're pushing the top of the hour here, and
okay.
Poor Bob's over there pushing buttons like nobody's business. So we'll be right back, and we have you as our hostage for the second hour. So we're not actually running out of time yet. We'll be right back with Patrick Wood. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within. Smiling faces sometimes they don't tell the truth. Smiling faces tell lies, and I got proof.
They tell me I am free in this democracy, this free society. They give me all I need on my TV. It tells me what to believe.
That's where I get all my information.
TV, yeah, absolutely.
If it's on TV, it has
cable.
To be true. Yeah.
Wow, that is spooky. Is there more, Bob? Oh, there's more. Hold on. How nice they have, like, the little quiet pan flute playing. Nothing scary here. No problem.
Sam Fear.
Sam Fear.
Switch channels, but they're all the same. Faceless lizards who are dealing the game. They take our freedom, but they never take the blame.
Wow, that was good too.
They say they open our eyes so we can see how they bite off all the world's disease, like AIDS, cancer, and terrorist plots, and WMD.
Okay, well, that was fairly comprehensive. I hope you all enjoyed that.
Hit all the hot spots.
It all rolls you up in Agenda 21, and it's being helped by your TV. I'm sure nobody believes that. Har, har, har. Hey, so I forgot the question we asked you last time, Mr. Wood, like a half hour ago. What happened to the trilaterals in the first round? Or not trilaterals, the technocracy guys in the first round. What blew their deal the first time?
Yeah, let's finish. The thought we had on the CFR that I was going to make is
okay,
that
so now it's not my fault.
40% of the directors of the CFR are members of the Trilateral Commission.
Oh.
And the head of the CFR is a member of the Trilateral Commission.
Of course.
So the question is, who controls who? You know, a lot of people say, oh, it's the CFR. CFR controls everything. No, they don't. I'm sorry, but the Trilateral Commission so overwhelms and dominates the CFR, it's not even funny. If anything, you can almost say that the Trilateral Commission owns the CFR in a lot of ways, and they use it to their own benefit, but it's not the other way around. So I'm sorry. I wanted to get that out.
No, good. There's kind of
a misconception about who's controlling who.
Well, you know, it's always the little group controls the big group because it's easier to get your, you know, stuff all in one sack if you're a small group.
That's right.
Hard to have an evil plot with way too many people.
Yes.
So how'd these guys blow out the first round?
I mean, back in the 1930s?
Yeah.
Well, they had two problems against them. One, FDR became president and gave us the New Deal. There was a lot of technocracy represented in the New Deal, by the way, but the early technocrats back in those days, one guy actually wrote a book and called on Roosevelt to declare himself dictator as soon as he got into the presidency. And just implement technocracy outright.
Wow.
They proposed to dismiss Congress summarily, and just turn the operation of the world over to the science and engineers. Can you imagine?
It just bundles it up, makes it a lot cleaner that way.
They really thought they had it all together there.
Well, they did, and they felt like they had some God-given mandate or something to take over the world. Mad scientist, right? Aldous Huxley looked at technocracy in 1932 and wrote Brave New World. That's where that book came from. That was his inspiration, technocracy.
And we all know how that turned out.
We know how that turned out. Scientific dictatorship. That's exactly where it's headed today. Huxley was not some clairvoyant. He didn't have a crystal ball. He's just a man, puts on his pants just like any other man. Well,
but he paid attention. He looked at who else was putting their pants on one leg at a time.
I know.
we're gonna roll us past the news here. On a quick note, I hope you stick with us here for the second hour, because there's a lot more to come. We need to look at how this fits into the Obama administration here of late, because 2030 is coming for all of us now. So it's not just about the past, it's about the future. Stick with us. We'll have Mr. Patrick Wood on second hour. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Oh, yeah.